Hello and welcome to the latest edition of the TetraCast. My name is Zach Reese. I'm your host. So it is the December 30, 2017 edition of our lovely podcast, the last podcast of 2017. And it's been a hell of a year.
Yeah. This is the final one.
We've grown pretty significantly as a site. It's been exciting to see how much we've grown in leaps and bounds over the course of that. And we've had some new people that have come aboard. And so I'd like to introduce all three of our special guests that we've got here. Of course, first off, we've got Josh Torres.
I'm not new, unfortunately.
No, you're the only one who among my guests here that is not necessarily new. You've been here for a few years, but that's fine. Also got James Galizio.
Hello.
Hello, and Cha Min Wu.
Hey, what's up?
How's it feel to be new?
Yes.
It feels great, I guess.
Of course, James and Chow joined us this year, and so they're part of the reason why we've grown so much. They've been a big help, as of course Josh, you too, and myself, and everyone else. It's been pretty exciting to see how much we've grown of all the new people that we've hired on, and you know, 2018 should be even greater based on the way things are going and what we have planned. We have a lot being worked on right now, a lot of exciting new things for RPG.
Yeah, I mean,
sites.
They're just a lot of the, like, in the behind the scenes production pipeline type of stuff. You kind of saw an inkling of it this year, you know, with the Division trying to lean more into guides, and we've seen a lot of great feedback on that. And you know, there are areas that we're starting to improve on, but I think the guides were a great first step, and you know, we're gonna take that idea forward, and I think people will really like what we have in store.
Yeah, so before we actually get into some of these other discussions, let's talk about what you guys hope to do for RPG Site in 2018. Speaking for myself, this past year I did playthroughs of Valkyria Chronicles 3 and Panzer Dragoon Saga, which are both on YouTube, on a YouTube channel, which has been, you know, an amazing experience being able to play Valkyria Chronicles 3 again, but on a different route, and that still is a great game. Panzer Dragoon Saga, a game I've long held admiration for, but I never really played it, and so it was fun being able to do that here. And next year, of course, I hope to be able to do even more playthroughs. I'm trying to work some things out, but I have a pretty big series plan, and I think that's one side of the site that we could, as you were talking about, that we could find important ways to improve upon, more video content. But, you know, people listening, don't worry, we'll still have plenty of written content. We know how much people really appreciate that and don't really have the ability to, or the motivation to watch video only. It's like, so we'll have a lot of written content, plan a lot of guides, a lot of features and editorials. Speaking of which, I just want to say that we do have some great stuff on the site right now. We've got a lot of Final Fantasy 30th anniversary celebrations. We got this coverage on Final Fantasy V and how it means to break the game. The portrayal of motherhood. Natalie did a great job with that one. Liz did the Final Fantasy V one. Chelsea did the Cabal Crystallis one.
Mm-hmm, yeah. And you did the Final Fantasy Tactics one. But all of them have been freaking phenomenal. Like, great reads. Like, you know, but, like, it's like actual, like, kind of like new examinations on, like, Final Fantasy series as a whole. It's nice to read. It's a very cathartic.
Yeah, it's crazy to think that Final Fantasy Tactics, I believe, I think that came out in 1998, if I'm not mistaken. So I believe.
That sounds right.
Yeah, I think it's that it actually will celebrate its 20th anniversary next year, if I'm not mistaken. And so
it's
1997, you're right. Yes, because it actually came out America 98. That's where I got confused. I remember getting it shortly after my birthday. That's how I remember it. But yeah, there's a lot of actually great games that have their 20th anniversary in 2018, including like Xenogears coming up pretty soon here, a couple months. Suikoden 2 has its 20th anniversary.
That was such a good game.
such a great game. I think even like the original Half-Life, I believe, is also 20th. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of great stuff. But sans Half-Life, of course. Well, we have big plans for those ones as well. Like even me and Chelsea have got some big stuff planned for Xenogears because it meant so much to us that we wanted to do something for the site for that. Mm-hmm. But what do you guys want to do? James, is there anything in particular, since you're new to the site, is there anything you want to sort of contribute in 2018? Any ideas? I know we got Monster Hunter coming up soon.
Monster Hunter Month is just in a few days.
Yes. Only month? Wow, I thought it was like the whole year.
Oh man, Monster Hunter World,
well,
the year of Monster
Hunter. Specifically for this site, January is the Monster Hunter Month. I mean, it's going to, there's also Dragon Ball FighterZ and stuff that's also coming out that's going to be amazing.
Oh my gosh, that's good. That looks so good. Did you see the opening for that? Oh my gosh. Shredding.
I've long been a fan of Arc System Works, and it feels fitting. It seems like that this upcoming year is going to be the year that they take the rightful throne at the top of the fighting game industry.
I mean, they kind of already are in my mind, but then also, of course, they're opening the Western branch. I mean, I think they already have, but like they're going to actually do something with it next year, along with like Spike Chunsoft and others. And so it's like 2018 is going to be the year also of Japanese developers opening their Western branches. It's kind of crazy too.
The one thing specific that I really do want to work on this upcoming year is something that also we talked about just a few moments ago. I want to get into a bit more video content because I have done some slight video content before for other outlets, but I feel like I can do a lot more of it.
Oh, man, that's the first time you haven't name-dropped a site when you said other sites, so that's cool.
Well, because you keep giving me crap for it.
Oh, of course. No,
it's okay. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
Just teasing you, man. We always tease you.
Yeah. But besides that, nothing too specific. I want to do work on some more editorials for the site, I feel like, if I can.
Well, let me broaden this a little bit because I feel like I don't want to just kind of toot our own horn here. Is there anything, generally speaking, in the new year, like any New Year's resolutions, anything like that?
I feel like I've accomplished a lot this year. I guess I want to work on my fitness a bit more next year, but that's something everyone wants to do each year. So
that's probably the most popular one, but you know, it's important, of course.
Yeah, pretty much that, and I guess just continue focusing on like schooling and whatnot. I've been doing college for the last like few years, so just keep focusing on that, focusing on work here, and then focusing on my fitness and just that balance and whatnot.
Cool. Best of luck with that. How about you, Chow? Anything for the site or in general that you hope to do in the new year?
Well, I want to try to make like a full-fledged guide. You know, I don't think that's kind of possible with the current site layout. It would be kind of weird to have separate articles and stuff, but I really want to try to have like an entire walkthrough for a game, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Just like you were talking before, how you'd want to have like sort of like a table of contents and have break it out like that. So, you know, just a full-fledged, like almost like a Wikipedia style.
That's his bread and butter. Like,
yeah. You've got experience with that, yeah.
He's so good at it.
Yep.
I've used your guides before. Shit. I mean,
I have his Tokyo Zanadu EX Plus guide open in another tab right now.
That's why he works for us. That's why we hired him.
Yeah. I'm just saying, like, child, like, yeah. Look, shout outs to you, man. I'm like just making really, really good fucking guides.
It's tough. It's tough work, I imagine. Very tedious, but still important.
Crucial. Like it can get really like annoying sometimes. You had to like replay it in a certain area like so many times to get like a certain results. And you know, sometimes like you don't need that result. You're just casually playing, right? You know,
of course, it's like
when you're writing multiple guides, you want to know everything.
Yeah, I totally get that. Well, that's cool, Josh. Is there anything in particular you have in mind?
Shooting the shit in 2018, but I mean, a little bit more video for me. I want to try a lot because I've been messing Vegas Pro. I got there from the Humble Bundle deal a few weeks back, and I've been seeing a lot. It feels a lot easier to like produce video on there, so it feels very inviting. So I have like a renewed passion, like, you know, to return to that because the current software I was using wasn't that great. They kind of had a lot of like concessions that you had to like get around and.
Yeah.
So it wasn't too great. So video content, I would definitely want to do more, but I do really want to visit, the Branching Path, sub-series more on the site, which is basically, you know, a series of articles that aren't necessarily RPG bound or are tied to RPGs. It's kind of like more of a writer's personal passions of what they like, you know, it's kind of a free form kind of thing. And 2017, like I wrote a few here and there, but it was such a packed year. That I was like, it's hard to get to because after you're done with one assignment, it's like, oh shit, there's already like three more other things that like we got to get to. So hopefully 2018 kind of slows down on that aspect a little bit, and hopefully I can get some of these games, the Sears releases done in 2018 as well. So give me a little breathing room. Mm-hmm.
Not happening, by the way. I'll tell you, 2018 looks insane. So
you're screwed. That's part of the thing I've been doing. Like within the next couple of days, we'll have a most anticipated article going up, and then like I've been
actually
producing
tomorrow
the video
as of this recording we'll have one of your videos up there. Yeah, because we have planned, we should mention that December 31st tomorrow as of this recording we'll have our we've already got up on the site our we'll talk about that in a little bit, but we have our top five game of the year of 2017, or the RPG site awards of 2017. We have that up on the site, but tomorrow we'll have our most anticipated for 2018. Before, that was its own category in our award ceremony that we do, but this year we decided to do a little bit different, where that's we broke it out into its own article, so we'll have that up on the site. And as I mentioned, yes, we'll have a video that Josh produced, did a hell of a job on. I actually thought it was pretty darn cool. I was kind of I was pretty impressed. And then on January 1st, in fact, Monday, we'll have our upcoming Games of 2018 article as well. So the next few days are going to be pretty intense. Already we have on the site, you were talking about Branching Path. I was going to mention this later, but might as well since this is in context. You just put up, Josh, you put up your top 10 games of 2017. Of course, this is Branching Path, so it's not just regulated to RPGs, although, of course, we mostly play them. So
yeah.
It's kind of focused on that. Why don't you talk a little bit about that one?
Oh, yeah, of course. I was going through, you know, earlier on in the week, I was like, okay, I did the same thing last year of like, okay, what did I actually enjoy, you know, just in games in general in 2017. Yeah. And picking 10 out of all the games this year actually wasn't like too big of a problem. I'm like, I know where my heart lies in a lot of these, right? But like having to like make like a ranked order of them is always like the toughest part. Is like, okay, well, this tough part where you kind of have to start nitpicking in your mind. It's like, what do I actually value out of all these, right? So, you know, there are some fun ones on there that I love, like Cook Serve Delicious 2, Puyo Puyo Tetris.
need to play that.
Oh yeah, the like just very nice like little games that like that I came back to relax, challenged me in a way that like a lot of games didn't. But you know, but 2017, once again, we always stress this all throughout this year, that like it was one hell of a year for RPGs. There was a lot of amazing ones everywhere, whether it was like an RPG by the strict definition of what an RPG is to a lot of people, like kind of like turn-based battles, a lot of damage numbers, a lot of, you know, just like what we've seen of RPGs back in the past, but also RPGs going forward, that, you know, all the rise of action RPGs, as you see with Nier Automata on my number one, but you see that in Xenoblade Chronicles 2.
Yeah.
A little bit on that list. And as well as 2017 was the year of really upping the ante of like narrative in games, right? Like when people talk about games in 2017, it's most remembered for the very strong storytelling and how games like kind of present not only their narrative, but how it makes use of the elements inside of the video game to present it to people.
Yeah.
So I think that's what my list kind of really drove home. And I had a lot of fun, you know, kind of sharing my thoughts on like on that aspect of gaming. And of course, like ultimately, it is in the realm of video games, like Nintendo made a super, super, super big comeback this year.
Yeah. Oh, totally. I totally agree with that.
Yeah, with the you know the release of the Switch and kind of the whole how well that has been doing and will continue to do, along with just like it has arguably the best launch year for Nintendo.
I actually recently said that it passed the PlayStation 2's first year sales, so that's super impressive considering, you know, where it was just a year ago.
So, yeah, exactly.
It's intense.
Put in perspective, it seems inevitable now that the Switch is going to outsell the Wii U's lifetime sales in a year.
Well, they said like the next fiscal year they want to have 20 million units sold. So yeah, that's like, I think the Wii U sold what, like 10, 15? So yeah, that's totally
interesting. Yeah, like 14 million worldwide by the end of its run. So.
Worldwide, and I think that you can probably get at least that in North
Japan.
America alone. Yeah.
Probably can get that in Japan, yeah.
No, totally, too.
Well, the Wii U had a pretty impressive library on launch, if I remember correctly, but they just had like nothing.
I don't really remember that.
Someone that had a Wii U on launch, I'd say that it had quantity, not quality.
Yeah, I think it was like a lot of mini games, if I remember.
Yeah, it was still riding the wave of like what the Wii established, right?
I'll also say that, ports. And I might get some crap from this in the comments, but the worst thing about the Wii U is that the best use of the gamepad is still the game that came packed with this freaking system to begin with, Nintendo Land. No game.
Oh yeah, I forgot that.
Wait, I don't know. I think Xenoblade Chronicles did a pretty good job with the map and everything. I thought that was pretty cool.
Yes, but Nintendo Land used it for so many different things that actually showed how it could be used for like different types of gameplay.
Yeah, not surprising. Nintendo.
If you had people to play it with, it honestly is probably still the best multiplayer game on the system.
I don't know, man.
I think Kirby, okay, multiplayer, I
might give you there, but Super Mario Maker, man, making use of that tablet.
Yeah, that's actually important to know, like that. Like I think Kirby had a great one too. So, I mean, I totally get what you're saying, but that's the problem is that Nintendo is always the one to show the best use of it, and then you got other developers not knowing what to do about it. And I think the only thing I can see, the only problem I can have right now is that. Right now, they recently said that they won't put out those double capacity
cartridges.
I'm thinking about the word the carts because right now they're like 32, and they said 64 might not come out until poly 2019. Because the problem you're gonna have to face is that games, of course, are gonna be bigger and bigger. It might not become an actual issue until maybe around that time. So maybe it's not.
Yeah, it's already becoming an actual issue right now.
I mean, like they can still find ways to compress it and all that stuff. But like, I think that developers are gonna hit this wall where it's gonna be like, it's gonna be really hard to develop for the Switch because of that the hard drive space and having to rely on like considering how much space people actually have. Because people are already upset whenever they have to download a game that takes up all of it, like that Bayonetta 1 and 2 thing. And of course, you know, the other games like even Breath of the Wild, they have problems with that. So like the fact that they might not do that, we might already see some trouble in 2018, but you know, maybe they'll fast track that and reconsider. But for what it is right now, absolutely. Personally, I think the Wii U has a great lineup as well. Like you can probably find at least maybe like a dozen games well worth playing.
One of our RPG sites, one of the games of the year was a Wii U game.
Yes.
Breath of the Wild. So, I mean,
I would not play Breath of the Wild on the Wii U, but yeah.
One thing I want to say about
I hear it's all right on the Wii U.
Card thing is, I feel like, and maybe I'll be wrong, I want to be wrong, but this definitely seems very similar to what happened with the Vita, where it launched with the 4 gigabyte game cards, and Sony kind of alluded that they might have 8 gigabyte cards down the road, and then it just never happened.
Well, I mean, obviously, the Vita, the big problem is that it hit the memory limitation like a year ago, and so... they're really struggling. So you got visual novels, which don't need it. Otherwise, like no one wants to make games for it anymore.
Also, the big problem with the Vita is it actually had like a specific kind of memory card. It wasn't standardized. It was trapped in that ecosystem.
Now you don't have to worry about that at all because they hacked it, so you can use microSD cards. So it's not.
Really have one of those adapters.
Yeah, but
you want legal solutions on certain things.
I'm playing it legal. It's just Sony won't let me have more hard drive space, so I had to do my own thing. The game. So,
not to mention if you hack a PSD, you can literally plug an external hard drive into it.
I've got a 256 gigabyte memory card that I bought for like, you know, $50, and I don't have to worry about that's a 128. 120 gigabyte I bought for $50, I don't have to worry about it. If I tried to do the same thing with a Sony, that'd be like well over $100. So
yeah.
It's just not sure. Hopefully, I mean the problem is also is that recently was it Andrew House, which obviously, he doesn't work there anymore, so it doesn't really matter.
He works there. He's just migrating out.
I think it's only
to
the end of the year. Only till tomorrow. I think he's gone after that. I'm pretty sure that's the case. In any case, he said that he didn't see like a future for handheld gaming, which is insane to think about. I mean, I put out that in my own, the top 5 article I did that I talked about it. But like, the idea that they touted... the fact that the PS4 proved that console gaming isn't dead and then turn around and say, oh, we don't see a market for portable gaming because they lost. That's like the thing is that, you know, because they lost both times that now it's like, well, we have an idea what we're talking about. No, you don't. The big difference is that Nintendo actually supports their system with first party games as opposed to Sony, where it's like, you know, they drop out pretty quickly. It's upsetting to hear that stuff, and it makes me upset that like this year, I think was the time that I felt like Sony's hubris really showed, and it kind of upset me.
Yeah, it's definitely strange. Sony had a great year with the PlayStation 4, but besides for Horizon and I guess maybe everybody's golf.
I mean, you got Persona and
it's just an HD remaster. But none of that Sony did themselves, really. It was just third-party developers kind of taking the lead.
And that might go away because you already seen a lot of those games go to, you know, Nintendo Switch and PC and stuff like that. I mean, obviously, I don't expect it to be, unless it's an old game being localized, like there were a few this year. I don't see it being like PC exclusive, but you definitely saw like even Valkyria Chronicles 4, where it's like, you know, it's going to come to, you know, PS4 and Xbox One and Switch and eventually PC. So it's this thing where it's like those. What used to be PlayStation exclusives aren't really happening anymore. It's because they find like these market, these other platforms more enticing, and you know those makers like Microsoft, Nintendo are more desperate in a way. Like they're really fighting for it, as opposed to Sony, where it's like, hey, we got big sales, come to us. You know, it's like, I don't know.
I think it's just issues until the PlayStation 5.
Yeah, that's I've got that in mind. I think in the end, what really matters is are games coming to the system? Are people happy with that?
I mean, Microsoft definitely doesn't really have any games to be excited about in 2018. But for me, it's that they've been more kind to their consumers. You know, and when you hear like, for example, Phil Spencer talk about the industry and about the way what they've learned so far, you really feel like he's trying his very best to do that, and like he's trying to find ways to improve what has been a pretty bad launch for the Xbox One. And so and you get it, he's very honest, very upfront about everything. For Sony, it's like it feels like the people that you really got to know and be friends with, like outside of maybe like, you know, Sean Layden, the one thing I kind of got bummed about is that, you know, Sean Layden showed up and it was great to see him, but like you never really, the personalities that used to be at Sony have gone in some way, you know. It's like Adam Boy is no longer
Shuhei is still there.
Yeah, but he was barely up there, you know, this year, it felt like, outside of like the Tokyo Game Show and like a little bit of PSX. And then like Gio Corsi wasn't up there at all because probably they don't have any games for Vita, so they didn't have him up there. So
that's still my favorite memory from PSX. Oh my, and the Vita.
That's like, it's crazy to think like the best game, like the most important game released this year for the Vita, outside of, you know, own personal things, maybe like Undertale, you know, that's like the thing where it's like that was their announcement. I think that was like on the pre-show. So like they don't do anything to that, and they already, like a year or two ago, they already basically shut out indie developers from their conferences because they only needed them for the launch, and once they got the boost they needed, they basically shut them out of the conferences. So it's now,
well, I don't think that's completely
true.
I heard that from an indie developers that they were planned to go up on stage, but they were cut from the conference.
Yes, indie game, they have been putting less of a focus on indie developers.
Well, they got rid of their whole like initiative that they did.
Unless they're doing PlayStation VR. If they're doing PlayStation VR, they'll give them the time.
No, that's not. I mean, I wouldn't even necessarily agree.
Well, E3 conference again. I mean, pretty much half the PSVR games were indie games that they were giving the spotlight.
I would not mean outside of like a sizzle reel. Like the big games were the ones that they only like maybe two or three. You know, it's no longer no iHeart Indies. You know, they don't have that anymore. You know, so that's that's why I feel like Nintendo, where it's like they really dedicate like big parts of their stuff to the indie developers, because they took what made Sony Soul Initiative successful. They took it for themselves so they can bolster their library. But you get the feeling that that's going to continue. The only downside I'll say is that whenever Nintendo puts out their the weekly download lists, it feels like they're just gonna dump them at the end. And that's about it. That's the only like disheartening thing about it. Otherwise, you know, I'm pretty impressed with it. And you know, Microsoft has their own, I don't know if they still have that
ID at Xbox,
yeah, that pub thing and the ID at Xbox thing. But even then, it's like, I mean, I kind of hate that idea at Xbox thing to hold. Isn't it like they have to like release their games side by side at least, or exclusive? I don't know.
Well, yeah, it's one exclusive. Good thing about Xbox nowadays is that it's completely free for you to become a.
You can UWP, turn your Xbox. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, and UWP developer, and recently they made it so that like before, the limit for UWP apps on the Xbox was that you only had access to 1 gigabyte of RAM. You only had access to like a few of the cores on the Xbox. It was enough for most apps, like multimedia apps, stuff like VLC and stuff. Now they made it so that you have more control of the system. And basically, if you make a game for Windows 10 UWP and you add in gamepad support, it just works.
Well, I'll just boil it down, because I don't want to, you know, keep this discussion going on for too long. For me, My personal opinion, to sum it all up, is that Nintendo has a very exciting 2018 coming up here, because they've got the potential like a Fire Emblem, Shin Megami Tensei, Pokemon, all these other games that are in Dragon Quest, of course, for the Switch and the 3DS, potentially, in the West, you know. That could be big for them. Microsoft, they have a lot to prove. They need to show some games that are worth buying for 2018, especially with the Xbox One X. Crazy to think that you can already get that on discount with like bundles and things like that. Clearly, they're trying their best to try to sell something that is still hard to market. And Sony, it's that they've got the games. Now they really need to focus on the community and developing features for the PS4 that people can care about. Because in my opinion, 2017 had absolutely like nothing for the PS4 as far as like the firmware to be excited about. Whether that means, you know, I don't know if people will just be satisfied that they can change the PSN name or something like that, because they kind of hinted at it that maybe by next PSX they'll figure something out. Otherwise, like, I think that's important to do that. You know, if they did two things, to me, like, two things they could really do to make me really happy as far as like their hardware and software kind of mix, it's that introduce backwards compatibility or really boost the PS2 on PS4 library, because my god, that thing is so sad. They're putting their old remasters on there and counting it as that. It's like the Jack remasters, they put it on there and counted it. It's like, no, fuck that. that's not what we want. Give us the goofy things.
It's gonna be also weird, like, you know, if they try I don't see any reason for them to ever boost backwards compatibility unless they shoot down PS Now.
The problem, of course, is that, you know, as opposed to Microsoft, where they're just taking an emulator and just getting an agreement, it's that, you know, they have like these rules that developers have to follow, where they have to add like trophies and these other things that they have to put in there in order to put it on their PS2 on PS4 system thing. But honestly, that's, I don't know if that, maybe that shot them in the foot, that whole thing, because that they're trying to make them do that, because I think that if all they had to do was give the okay, they'd have a much better way, because the backwards compatibility list for Xbox is pretty amazing.
I have to do a reflow on my old ass 60 gigabyte PS3 that can still do hardware.
I miss my. Oh, yeah. The yellow light of death.
It's just a closet, but I need to send that to a shop.
Oh, every revision of the PS3 had hardware PlayStation support, like the original PlayStation.
Yeah, that's what I really love.
I should
about
say,
it.
You know, if you did get that before, if you bought your PS3 before the, if you got the old one, you can actually probably get some money out of that settlement they just did for the other OS thing.
Yeah, I signed up
you
for it.
You should do that, Josh. You get some free money.
Well, I live in Canada, so
I do remember years ago, I tried to install, I did get Linux installed on it, like, and then ultimately I was like, ah, that's kind of neat, and they kind of wiped it.
Yeah, as long as you have the ID at the on the back of your PSN.
You don't even need that. You just need to give them your PSN ID, because
I thought that was one of the asks, like that and the ID.
No, that was how it was before. The reason why you're hearing about the settlement again is because a judge said, okay, this is BS. You're making it way too hard for people to sign up for this. You have the records, because they've already had this happen with the Vita, where there was a settlement where you just needed to give them your PSN ID. They check your records.
I need to sign up for that then.
If it's that easy, then maybe.
Yeah, but obviously, Chad, it's because this is a U.S. legal system thing. They can't apply it to other countries. That would be, you know, because I think in the U.K. they did that whole thing like years ago about the other OS hacking and whatnot, removal of the system features. I think they already took care of that years ago. In Canada, I have no idea. You'd have to like talk to whatever the court system to find out if they're planning on doing anything for that.
You have to start a class action yourself or something.
Yeah, start your own class action, buddy. You have the funds for that, right? I'm sure there's a lawyer out there that'd be willing to help. But yeah, let's get into some of the other stuff we want to talk about here.
Yeah,
so.
Before we move on, like you just barely published your own top five. Just a little brief thing of like what were your thoughts going into your top five?
Yeah, I mean a lot of. Sorry.
Oh, sorry. Was that on? Question
for
Zach.
Yeah.
Chai, you don't have a top five yet. You make a top five.
your top five doesn't exist. I'm just kidding.
Oh, yeah. We're not going to get into a top five discussion on the podcast, but definitely, you know, if you have an article, please do it, Chai. That'd be awesome to see what you considered. But yeah, it's for me, it's like, you know, most of my articles kind of lamenting the way I just did. But for my list itself, it's like... I did not get a chance to play a lot of the big games that came out this year, just because, you know, trying to...
I really need to go play Night in the Woods. I really need to go
You
play
really need to, yeah. So, like I was mentioning, I haven't played, like, Persona 5, Yakuza 0, I haven't played some of the other, like, Wolfenstein, or, like, some of the other big games that came out this year, because The Branching Path, of course, is more than just RPGs, that's why I mentioned that, but, you know, like, a lot of those big games. But from what I do play, it's that, just so, you know, top five, it was, like, Utoro Amano, Mask of Truth, which I let my thoughts be known on the Game of the Year podcast. Go listen to that if you want to hear my full rundown of why.
Congrats on it being able to convince Alex to get that on the top ten.
He plays it up, but, man, he's easy to like, convince that, you know, to have a game on there. That's how Divinity Original Sin beat over Dragon Age Inquisition, is because I made him fold on that. It was kind of easy. I played, like, a ton of Inquisition, but even then I was like, you know, Alex, combat sucks. But, you know, yeah, like, my number one was Night in the Woods, you know? And so it's such an amazing story that really tells the story of somebody who, like, you know, leaves and comes back to their town to see that, you know, everything's the same, but at the same time, everything's different. And so, like, this whole town is falling on hard times. And it's just it's interesting because, like, I had that experience where, like, I went away for college, then came back and went to, like, the mall that I used to go to and see a lot of the stores be shut down, and just see, like, the place that I used to hang out, like, they're not there anymore. Place getting torn down, or just like the school that I used to go to completely changed because of all the renovations it had. So it was like that sort of thing that it hit close to home. And also, you know, the friends that used to know, they're completely different. Like, I remember not long ago I went to do, like, a LAN party with a bunch of friends. I hit a LAN party and find out how much they've changed. It's kind of amazing. So being able to have a story like this in a game, you don't really see that much, you know, a story like this, especially one that's as personal as this one feels, and how important the character dynamics are. Like, they do such a great job of making everything feel genuine, and so that's why.
I have a question. So usually a lot of games, to get you relatable to a certain character, they have, like, a long prologue, so you know these things. So when you come back and all these, you all switch. Does it have this kind of prologue, or you just kind of learn it?
No, honestly, it's like, it's the game is all set up in, like, a day-to-day thing, so you sort of learn it over the course of the game about what's really happening, especially with your interactions with the characters. Like, I've felt inclined to talk to a lot of the people, but the beginning, no, mostly it's like you barely even know that you've, like, dropped out of college, really. It's because you start, like, you basically, like, dropped off on, like, I think it was, like, a bus or a train, and, like, you have to make your way back home by kind of... because the original place to get home has been shut down, so you have to, like, navigate your way through like a valley and like the old train tracks and everything, just to have to get back.
That's what happens. You drop out of college, just exactly like that.
Exactly. But no, like, yeah, it's fully. It's not like a bunch of text up on screen to tell you something. A lot of it is just embedded within the game itself, and so you sort of pick up on things like newspaper clippings. Like I said, conversations with your parents, with the townsfolk, with your friends. You get to know what's happening and find out the events that happened while you were gone. And some of them are pretty tragic as well, which, like I said, it's great to be able to experience something like that, and also get to understand the emotional changes in these characters, especially, like, even the main character May, who comes off as, like, a jerk, but really it's that she's trying to find a way to cope with her shame in a way. And also, you know, of that age, she's, like, she's got, like, anxieties and depression and stuff like that, and so she's sort of lashing out, and you find what happens, and she starts to get that as well. Like, she kind of grows as well and finds out that, you know, her behavior and the way that she, you know, attacks people whenever she's uncomfortable about something. But at the same time, it's also hilarious. Like, there's very funny moments in that game that made me sincerely laugh out loud, and it's very smart writing too. And so, like, that's what I think that really drew me into that game. And it's like, for a small budget game to be able to have something like such powerful experiences like that makes me, like, happy that I look for these smaller experiences. And I think that I find a better way to I find a lot more satisfaction from those smaller games than I do. Like I want to play some of these other games coming up. Like, the one game I just played recently was Observer, and that's a great game. That is a straight up, like, cyberpunk psychological horror kind of stuff. It's very fun to play, and it's like, you know, it's made by a really small team, you know, and, like, those types of things. I think the more people play those games, I think it shows that, like, you know, for example, Horizon, they took a risk on something that they've on a AAA developer. It's that it hopefully, like, those type of experiences convince other big budget AAA publishers and developers to sort of take more risks, and so and that you get more of these types of experiences like Horizon Zero Dawn had and Night in the Woods had. So I hope that that's the case.
Yeah, and even then, like it risk in the sense that like not even just like going, you don't have to like branch out to, like explore like a completely new IP, like
no
stuff they did like Breath of the Wild. You know, that's in my opinion like one of the riskiest bets I've seen on a single video game in a long while. You know, because anything like a shitload of things could have gone wrong for this game, and they somehow nailed it.
Yeah.
Well,
so it's like, I think with the Zelda branding, I don't think anything can go wrong.
I wouldn't say the thing is that Zelda is more sort of like, instead of before where like with Ocarina of Time or Majora's Mask stuff like that, that they're more like they sort of where they originate a lot of the stuff. It's that in this case they're more reacting to other open world games to create their own, but that's not a knock against it. In fact, it's that they took what it is and created what is essentially you were talking about this before, Josh, but like, you know, that this year is about storytelling. I think like environmental storytelling was big on this game, and the fact that everything was like, it was like densely filled and densely rich with stuff to sort of distract you and grab your attention, like even the little things like out of the corner of your eye, and the design decisions that they made about like stuff that is like line of sight. I mean, I heard this discussion before, but like, you know, how the way they decided to the colors that they chose for their shrines between blue and orange, the fact that you can see that through all kinds of weather and stuff like that, that you can see it spotted from like meters and yards and miles even away from where you are, you can see that through anything, sort of captures your attention. And I think that's, it's these decisions that they made is so smart, and you don't really get a lot of that even in like open world games. Obviously Breath of the Wild has its own problems with like, you know, rain and weapon durability, but it's outside of that, it's once again a very strong game of the year.
I think the biggest takeaway that, you know, Breath of the Wild has just in the overall landscape of games, like we have these certain expectations of like how open world games are designed these days, the do's and don'ts. You saw it. The game that exemplified that this year was Shadow of War. You know, it had it does every single thing a modern open world game does. It has a checklist, you have the towers, you fill out the map, it litters your fucking map with all sorts of icons, and it was just an overwhelming amount of everything. It tried to cram like every sort of fucking system you would think in an RPG these days, like a color-based loot, you know, and also like even gacha mechanics, and it just kind of had like a lot of everything. And the thing with Breath of the Wild, it just basically strips all of that out. It's like, say, hey, we want you to actually like play the game. We want you to actually, you know, when you climb a tower, we want you to use your own eyes to go seek out your own adventure. This map, we're gonna not like fill it with icons. We'll give you the icon set, but it's up to you to place these little stickers on however way you want. However way you want to like visualize, hey, I want to go back there, I want to explore that place, or there's a place I already explored. It's all up to you. And I think that's the biggest like achievement in a weird way for Breath of the Wild, is like it allows you to be an explorer rather than a tourist
it's crazy to think, because like you mentioned Shadow of War, it's like Assassin's Creed Origins, they pulled back on a lot of the stuff that makes Assassin's Creed what it is, like, you know, filled with icons and like littered with icons, stuff like that. It's that it's more like it probably had one of the best worlds in a long time, because like it's I mean, you had the main character and then you also had the world itself. It was very strong, you know. You can probably see your problems about other aspects of that game, but like they did a great job recreating that world and making it a world worthy of exploration.
Yeah, I want to pick it up because I hear very, very good things about how they decided to craft that world.
Yeah, it was well worth it that they decided to you know, skip a year in order to make a much better game. And so I hope that they continue with that. But, you know, I think everybody as an industry is like learning more about the right way to make an open world game if you want to continue with this. And the fact that Horizon Zero Dawn is clearly going to have a sequel based on the way that story leaves off. Mm-hmm. But the Wild is, I mean, Zelda, they're already seeing like, you know, the future of Zelda is pretty much in the open world. And then you've got obviously Assassin's Creed, and, you know, Cyberpunk 2077 is going to come out sometime soon. Maybe. Who knows? But, you know, that's like they're taking that concept and hopefully doing the right things with it. So
yeah, it's make me like, you know, believe in the open world genre again, in the way that a lot of games in the past 2 to 3 years, you know, kind of they're going for similar stuff, but this year just it was kind of like a breakout year thanks to Breath of the Wild for me.
You're using the technology the right way. Monster Hunter World is more exciting because you're able to, like, you know, chase after the dinosaur and catch up to what it's at.
Yeah, but without any of the loading zones. I hear that it adds so much. That's like it's more a consistent thing. The chase is actually, it feels personal.
I will say, James, I played the beta. I felt like a shithead because what happened is that, like, I forget what the name of the third boss is. It's the dino.
Anjanath, I think.
I don't want to get too much into this, but, like, the first thing you do is that you come up on it as it's sleeping, and then you attack it when it's sleeping. I felt really bad when I did that. You beat the hell out of it. It decides to run away, limping really bad, all the way up to its nest. Plops down and goes to sleep, and here I come into its nest, swinging my sword around, waking it up again just so I can kill it. I felt like the absolute worst person in the world, and I think that I was like, I felt like I was. I think we mentioned this last podcast, but I felt like the real monster there. And I just want to mention that to you because, like, I don't know how the community feels about that stuff, but man, like, I already felt really. Does it make you feel bad when you do that kind of stuff? Because boy,
they're hard-hearted veterans of the hunt,
oh,
man.
Yeah, there's memes about this. Like, there's this one image from a few years back where there's a Narga Kuga and a Narga Kuga cub, and it's like they're playing. Then the mom goes away and comes back, goes away, comes back, and every time it comes back, you'll notice that it's a little bit more beat up. Then the last frame, it goes away, and then the very, like, next two or three frames, it's just the baby waiting for the mom to come back.
Oh, no. Fuck Monster Hunter. Okay, I don't know if I want to play it, guys. I already feel really bad.
There's a case of scenario, let's just say. If these creatures are not cute looking, then you probably attack it without prejudice.
I don't even care. They're all adorable. It's like dogs, you know. I don't care what they
look like. They're so adorable, I want to wear them.
Well, I'm just trying to say this. You know, like, there's this one boss in Bloodborne, it won't attack you until you start attacking it. You know,
that's probably what happened in this case. They're attacking them, so the monsters in Monster Hunter World are probably the ones lashing out because they're defending their nest. Like, in Tokiden, at least, like, they're all Oni and they're all, like, mean and attacking everybody. There's no reason to, like, defend. There's no reason to not be to empathize with them. In Monster Hunter World, I feel totally different.
There's one specific monster in Monster Hunter that you're gonna want to hunt it no matter what, because it doesn't matter if you think it's cute. It's going to try and eat you. So.
Can I wear it though?
Yes.
You can wear all the monsters you want. Okay, let's get into the actual discussion here. So about the games that we've been playing. So of course, Josh, you're schedule's been mostly filled with end of the year stuff and production. Like, yeah. I said, we'll have a video up. I think that's pretty much it, right? Anything else?
Yeah, I mean, anything like all of nothing really noteworthy. I mean, Christmas happened, of course. I hope you all had a good one.
Yeah.
Mine was fantastic. You know, got to spend time with family, got a lot of clothes, of course, but someone gifted me an 8 terabyte external hard drive, so it frees up a lot of other fucking space on all the other hard drives, which kind of works out because I'll need the extra space for a lot. I want to do a lot more recording next year and do a lot of stuff in video, so that is cool. Other than that, I mean, food was good.
Food is good.
Look, my sister made mashed potatoes with 4 different cheeses in it and soft cooked lamb since like 5 in the morning that day.
Oh my gosh, so good. That sounds amazing. That's a good Christmas dinner right there. Oh my gosh. Well, that's the case. Now, James and Chow, you both been playing some Tokyo Xanadu. Chow, of course, you've been working on a guide. And James, I assume you're just trying to pick up on it?
My Xenoblade 2 review for another site is going up pretty soon. And the review I have going up afterwards is Tokyo Xanadu EX Plus.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. How's Tokyo Xanadu EX Plus to you, James?
I'm pretty sure Chow has similar feelings to this. If you're a big fan of Falcom titles, you're going to find a lot of references that you're going to like, but the game itself is just okay. It's a decent game, but just okay.
Like, I really don't like the story. It's like anime tropes, like, cranked up to the max.
Oh, yeah, that too. One thing that really got on me is I appreciate the extra character development that the side stories add to the game. I feel like without them, and they weren't in the original Vita version, there was pretty much little to no character development outside of the character's arc at all.
Yeah, they
love little to no character development.
Yeah, they join your party and they become background characters.
Oh yeah, and here's the worst part about that though. So it does add a bit more character development, except for the fact that some of these side stories, there will be character development in them, and then you'll see that character again in the main story afterwards, and they'll act like none of that development happened. Like,
oh, so
Rion,
it's Persona.
Yeah, like yeah. Rion, there's a side story about her trying to get over her fear of her powers. And then after that side story, the very first thing that you hear her talk about is, oh, she's afraid about her powers. Even though they'd already completely determined that, okay, that's not a problem anymore in the side story.
That's weird. So you can like kind of like complete her side story like in one go. Is it like a chain of events, or is just like a one like no like one stage thing or something?
The side story is like a thing that comes after at the end of a chapter, and it's like a small little stage with a little story sequence.
Yeah, because I was thinking if it's like a chain of stages, they should like kind of should just like time gate it or something to kind of make it more consistent. But
well,
it doesn't look like that.
Problem is though, is it's basically retconned, except not really. It's weird.
Yeah.
They probably forgot to double check their right.
Or they didn't care.
Yeah, that too. I mean,
the combat's all right, but it feels it doesn't have as much momentum as, say, Eze. Like, attacks, and then you'll feel like you're kind of grounded. I mean, I've heard a lot of people kind of compare it to the field attack system in Trails of Cold Steel, and I can definitely see why.
I was going to say, like, they kind of made Trails of Cold Steel into action RPG, then that's what they did, with a little lazy kind of anime light novel plot in there, you know?
I mean, you have the same orbment system, except now it's called...
Elements,
yeah. Just everything about the game, besides for the... Yeah, everything about the game is basically ripped off from something else.
Of course, that seemed like it was an amalgamation of what came before it, right? For Falcom.
Yeah, I think I wrote something like that in my
yeah, some I think I saw that too.
There's some enemy models that are different, but a lot of the enemy models like that aren't bosses are literally just ripped from Trails of Cold Steel.
If they were to make a sequel of it, what would you want most out of this sequel?
The combat system needs to be a bit better. The dungeons need to be a lot better, because as of right now, they're just brain dead easy. They have little nothing to them. They're completely linear for the most part.
Yeah, they have like no puzzle element to it. You just go to a straight line, look for a switch, remove the gate, go to the next side, and you know, that's basically it, right? You don't even need like a guide to really use it, actually, to be honest.
It makes your job easier.
Yeah,
it makes my job easier.
Just
but this
one
is
line.
Like,
just go to the end, follow the path.
This is one of the reasons why I stopped writing my Final Fantasy XIII guide. You know, I wrote a guide for that and I removed it because I didn't like the game in the end. It was like,
is that the mark like, of a good guide, like of a good game? Chow is like the harder it is to make a guide of it, it's the most likely a good game.
The first 20 hours, play the game. That's all it is. And then after that, it's like, okay, now I can actually talk about what you need to do.
Oh man,
old memes. Final Fantasy 13, for the record, so, anyway.
Well, I just didn't like that, you know, when I was writing the guides, like, just head straight.
Oh, that's pretty much it, like, follow the path.
On one hand, I like the references to the Trails series, but on the other hand, it's just like...
It references the Trails series.
It's just
I'd rather be playing the Trails series.
I mean, the only reason I like that is because it's... I recognize where it comes from. It's a better game.
Yeah, it's basically Easter eggs and stuff like that. Like, well,
Chow knows
like,
what I'm talking about because he's also played Crossbell. But when they introduce Yuki, and it's literally just Yona's introduction scene from Zero no Kiseki.
Yeah, they use exactly the exact same music.
Yeah, same exact music, same exact premise.
They just copy-paste it.
And
what if the dungeon uses a theme from no Kiseki too. They use the final dungeon theme, if I remember.
Like, just in a regular dungeon, they used it.
On one of the new after story chapters, they apparently used the last dungeon theme from no Kiseki.
That's bizarre.
Yeah, really? I have trouble saying.
Oh man, I haven't even gotten there yet. I'll be there soon. It's just like, seriously, they reuse so much. I mean, to put it another way, Zach.
It's Falcom. Falcom uses assets a lot.
I was going to say, it almost feels like something that Compile Heart would have done.
Yeah,
so it all makes sense. No, Falcom is actually Compile Heart.
Compile did used to make some of the biggest RPGs ever, so it's kind of difficult to like but, understand Compile hard. How
look, okay, the only thing I actually care about EX Plus is I want Falcon to make good on its fucking tease of the East versus Sendo Kiseki.
Yeah, pretty much.
Right there.
Oh my
I'm sure it'll happen. I'm sure it'll happen. It's just gonna.
Yeah. I need that to happen.
I like how when I mentioned that game, no one like knew like what the like, this existed. That PSP East versus game.
Oh man, it was. Look, I'm not going to blame people for not knowing it exists. It's a very, very, very niche thing.
Yeah.
And it never got localized.
Falcom's back catalog.
Has anyone ever, like, translated that game at all?
I played that game.
I played it. There's not,
like,
really much,
it get translated?
There's not really much to translate in it.
Yeah.
It's very,
very
straightforward.
No one did it, then, if they haven't already? That's
weird. We can probably too much effort for very little.
Yeah.
I mean, somebody's translating Akatsuki no Kiseki, so I mean...
Is Guan still doing that? Or
no, it's not Guan. It's somebody else.
Is that the newer game that came out?
That's the mobile
game.
Game.
Yeah, the mobile game.
It's the gacha game.
Yeah. That's what I was thinking. It's from actually. Killer that came out this year,
zero,
didn't it?
It's not Killer Falcom.
Killer Zero Byte is the one working on it, I think.
Isn't it just like the Chinese developer?
Yeah, it's the Chinese developer working on it. And I think the only thing Falcom is doing is like kind of looking at the writing and like saying, okay, that's consistent. Yeah, sure, thumbs up.
Just thinking about all the other games that came out this year that didn't get localized, like the Valkyrie Anatomia game, the Sinnoh Alice.
You don't want Sinnoh Alice getting localized. I'm okay with Valkyrie Anatomia getting a localization. Sinnoh Alice, I don't know,
man. That Star Ocean Anima Nemosis?
I think that would actually have... Okay, actually, I take that back because the Star Ocean mobile game is fucking weird because I don't recognize any of the fucking 1-star to 4-star people. The 5-star people are
it's
only the
originals.
Main characters.
Yeah,
and all the other ones, I'm like, I don't fucking remember this character. It's probably a side character in Star Ocean.
I played Final Fantasy Brave Exvius today, and most of the characters are original. So that's probably why I don't recognize anyone because they don't exist anywhere else.
It just reminds me, like, outside of some of the main cast in Star Ocean games, I couldn't tell you a fucking shit about the side characters.
That's probably true. I mean, that's like, that's the woman that was on the Star Ocean 3 on the spaceship at the beginning. That's where she's from. Like,
how could you not remember her?
Yeah, it's like really get deep into that. She has a lore. All right, so you've been playing that. For me, it's that I didn't actually. So we were talking about this before this podcast, but we were listening to another site's podcast, and they mentioned a Route E. In Nier Automata, and I was like, "What?" I thought D was the end of it because it was pretty like it was pretty important and like the fact. Okay, so slight spoilers, but when you beat Route D, it opens up a debug menu and chapter select, and I felt like it was pretty like if I start the game, if I click like another ending, when you hit like start game, it actually starts from like a certain point, so you know it's like a new route like the Nier series is known for. But when I do that in after beating part D, it's like actually I'm sorry, C. D is its own thing again. So when I beat C, I thought that was like the end of it. Then someone's like they had that discussion about it. I was like it was amazing. Oh, I can't believe it. This is such the best part of the game. I was like, well, what? So I went through that whole Game of the Year discussion not knowing anything about that whatsoever. So yesterday after listening to that podcast, I played it, and boy. Insanely good.
Uh-huh.
It was so damn uplifting and so powerful and so incredible. I'm not going to spoil it because that's not what this discussion's for a regular podcast. But I will say, boy, that really it caps off that experience so well. Like even if I have qualms about the other parts of the game, like I still find that moment was just so amazing. And I I'm going to share what I invested in later this week. But boy, I got really excited about Nier Automata. So and it makes me really excited to see what they do next.
Games don't usually make me like tear up, but now I was finishing that up,
man,
for you. It was so powerful for me. Yeah,
since you
recently like finished it. Obviously, not gonna spoil anything like a surrounding. But what was like your final words that you put in when it allowed you to?
Oh gosh, what was it?
You remember? Like, I don't remember.
I put like I know I put like USA in it at the end of it. I think so. I was like, something like you can do it. Keep going. I think it's like you can do it. Keep going. I did pay it forward. I'll say that. I paid it forward, and now I have to start the game all over again. So if I want to do that,
I didn't give up my save file because I want to fight the secret boss. So I was like, I want to do this, but I can't.
I even if I did know there was one, I'm pretty satisfied with having given that away, because then I could just play it again if I want to. So, just an excuse to get the side quest that I didn't do.
Yeah, I still need to get the PC version. I only have it on PS4.
It's eight months later, they still have it on the PC version. They still haven't patched it.
I'm not surprised.
But you could get the far patch.
I remember this some months ago, because I've been following it. Like, wasn't there like an update that they pushed out for, like one update that really didn't do anything for it that kind of broke the far patch?
Sorry to cut you off, but like, I know what you're talking about. It's that it basically tried to do like some sort of piracy thing, and like it like stopped the game or something. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah,
but that came from the far patch creator.
Someone came back and fixed it, so it doesn't do that. So
yeah, because he
has realized that Mike's been muted for the last few minutes.
Oh well.
I was going to ask, before you did the thing, Zach, at the very ending, did you buy all the trophies in the shop?
No, because I don't care for trophies, so I didn't care.
The right answer.
I knew about that, and I knew there's a story to go to where it's like there's a certain special thing you can get, like if you want to just, you know, it's like a, people like, you know, naysay about it, but like I didn't care to do that, you know. It's like I want to earn that trophy. Like this year, I got the Metal Gear Solid 5 Platinum trophy, and I was really proud of that. Like I didn't want to just, you know, do sort of the cheap way out. And so, like, I've only got like maybe 3 platinums so far, maybe 4, because I know I've got like the Persona 4 Dancing, R No Surge. I got that. And Metal Gear Solid 5, of course, I got the platinums for that, and I'm pretty proud of those achievements. Persona 4 Dancing was super damn easy, just play the songs on easy, and that's it.
Yeah.
Arno Surge, you have to actually do some stuff. Metal Gear Solid 5, obviously a lot of work. But, like, I don't know. Like, when it came to that, I was like, if it's that easy, I didn't feel that motivation to do that. If it was on maybe PS4, I'd consider it, but, like, I don't care about levels and things like that. Like, I don't get anything out of it. So, the fact that the rarity would be super, like, low, like, I mean, sorry, super high. Like you'd have like everyone getting basically like, you know.
I actually need to go see the rarity levels of the Nier Automata trophies and see like if the platinum is like at like common or something.
I'm pretty sure it's common actually.
I think a lot of people kind of give up after beating Route A. So
it's kind of funny. Like I'd actually recommend checking out your trophies because it's kind of interesting to see like what are the most rare trophies that you may have. Like for me, I know Metal Gear Solid 5's platinum is kind of rare, but one of the other ones was weird is like, you know, I think it was like what was that game called? It was the Noir Mega Dimension, not Mega Dimension, it was
the Hyper Goddess thing.
Yeah,
the Noir game.
Yeah, the Noir strategy RPG. I don't know if you remember that.
Yeah.
One of the things was like maxing out your relationships with all the characters. And I found a super easy way to do it, and it's apparently super rare. So I was like, okay. It was like maybe 3 or 4%. I was like, okay.
My rarest trophy is 0.1%.
Yeah, what was it?
The Platinum Trophy for Wipeout 2048 on the Vita.
Oh, man. I haven't played that. I actually want to get that new remastered collection they're putting out.
Yeah. The reason why it's so rare is because there's a couple of hard like gold trophies, like... forget what the one's called, Beat something. I know it's something that the Wipeout series is known for. And then it's the online multiplayer trophy. Nobody plays it online anymore, so...
Oh, well, good luck getting that
now. Yeah, that's the worst part of the fucking multiplayer-only trophies. That's the worst. Reminds me of like the days of Final Fantasy XI where you had to like max out your jobs and you got like 20 points on Xbox or something.
Remembering Far Cry 2, man. That was tough.
That was bad.
I still cared about trophies.
Exactly. That's why I gave up on that stuff a long time ago. I've had a PlayStation 3 since launch and I still don't have many trophies.
Speaking of Persona, has like 40. He's on trophy level 40 or something.
Oh man, James killed the segue. Shit.
Sorry.
Why don't you mute yourself for 3 minutes?
Trophy levels that pertain to Persona Dancing.
Yes.
That pertains.
From Persona.
Ciao. We want to segue this so smoothly. Let's get into the actual topics of the podcast. It's funny because we started this saying this would be a really short one, but man, we went on tangents.
We kind of went over a lot of these already, like the New Year's resolutions.
Oh, come on. We can still have some chatter. Let's talk about actual news of the week. So they're actually we left off
at the door already.
We left off on the let me talk about the stuff. On the last podcast, we kind of talked about the some of the live streams that were coming up. One of the ones that was just going to happen, honestly, I actually, for some reason, didn't adjust for the fact that Japanese time, was the fact that Atlus was holding their Persona 3 dancing and Persona 5 dancing streams. And so during that live stream they held, they shared new footage of both games, the Sonless, and also news about, of course, Persona 5, the animation, which will be airing this April. From 8-1 Pictures, who, if you don't know, did the other ones. And hopefully they don't fuck it up, but I'm not going to be surprised if they do. Because, boy, the quality of the animation they do sometimes when they're not, like close up on the characters is just god-awful. But we'll find out and see what that's like. But yeah, Persona 3 Dancing and Persona 5 Dancing, man, those look good.
Yeah, they showed off new trailers for both.
Tell me what you spent almost $200 on.
Oh, fuck. Okay, so they unveiled, you know, like their typical thing of like there's going to be obviously like these special editions for it. There's this edition that like you can get both Persona 3 and Persona 5 Dancing. And this is kind of like the second tier edition, so you get both of those games and along with like some DLC extras and whatnot. It's like, okay, whatever, right? So
yeah.
And then they had this super special like triple deluxe, and they're just like, what the triple deluxe? What the fuck is this?
That's like your favorite hamburger.
So it contains both Persona 3 and Persona 5 Dancing on it, but it also I think there's only for the PS4 version only. Where they have a special HD edition of Persona 4 Dancing All Night that's exclusive to that. That's like 17 or 18,000 yen.
Oh,
it's goodness. About eight. It's like $180. So, and so you get that, and it's only exclusive to that edition. There's not gonna be any like separate release down the line that they're planning for.
Which is fucked up, but yeah.
It's super fucked up, but
there's precedent for that.
Yeah,
Steins Gate Zero came out in Japan on the PS3, Vita, and PS4. It actually came up a code for a PS4 version of the original Steins Gate, and that's still HD. The only way to get on.
I mean, in the West at least, you've got like, you know, the Call of Duty 4 remastered version, which was supposed to be exclusive, and then they put it out on the store, so maybe they'll change their mind on this, but we'll know. Who knows? We don't even have a localization announcement yet, so who knows?
One thing I'm curious about the Persona 4 Dancing All Night is, will it have trophies? Because the Steins Gate that came with Steins Gate Zero actually did not have trophies on PS4.
I imagine it will, because it's already got trophies built into it, and so it won't
Steins Gate already had trophies on Vita and PS3 too, so I mean, that's what I'm curious about.
I wouldn't be surprised. I don't know about a platinum, but like I assume it's just like, because it's a digital version as well. I mean, I don't know anything about the Steins Gate thing. I just assuming maybe like it was more difficult for them because maybe they had on other platforms, but I imagine, like, for this, it's just going to be the same game, just with, you know, better visuals.
Look, okay, so, like, this thing sucks, okay, because both of them, like, both of the editions has, like, a full soundtrack of, like, those games. Four discs, over 60 tracks. Yeah, over 60 tracks, and it's, like, that's awesome. But, like, the DLC, like, outfits that you get that's not in the triple pack are, like, is really fucking amazing, because they have, SMT2... Like outfits, SMT1 protagonists, even Nocturne. They also have like Raido Kazunaha outfit and Soul Hackers. It's basically like digital Devil Saga ones. So it's like, but you'd only get that in that double pack, not the triple pack. I'm like, motherfucker, god damn it. So I knowing me and the fucking sucker I am, I'm like, if they sell that, I guess I'm, and I think they are, because they say it's a 2,400 yen value. So it's like, well, okay, I can't believe I'm fucking doing this.
Well, at least you're not as much of a sucker for that stuff as I am, since I just ordered that freaking Monster Hunter World PS4 Pro. I
mean, how much was that?
It's going to end up being just under 600 with after shipping.
Yum. So yeah, I mean,
fair, the shipping was like $90 of that. So
that's not too bad then, but still, it's still a lot. But so yeah, I mean, we have expensive pre-orders. I have one in the triple pack on Amazon Japan after thinking about it for like 5 minutes, and I was like, I fucking hate myself. It looks cool. I mean, I'm really excited about the track list, because you have Hideki Naganuma doing a remix of When the Moon's Reaching Out Stars on Persona 3, and to be clear, that's the dude who's behind Jet Set Radio. That's bonkers. You know, that's so cool.
You know, they're talking about like special guests that, you know, before, obviously, with Persona 4 Dancing, they had Hatsune Miku, and they had I forget what's her name, Persona 3's in the dream world, the velvet room. What was her name?
Elizabeth?
Yeah, Elizabeth was in it. I wonder if they would get Lisa from Persona 2. I think that would be really good, because, man, that would be, because everyone's like, what about a Persona 2 dancing?
Screw Lisa, put her dad. Her dad looks like Steven Seagal.
Oh, fuck. I don't want anyone to look like Steven Seagal.
It's also kind of, I kind of have this like inkling, because they also have Persona 3 portable music on it, so I can imagine maybe the Persona 3 portable female protagonist is like an unlockable character.
Oh my gosh. Everyone was so bummed out when they didn't have her, so it would be great to actually have her in this.
Yeah, But other than that, I mean, the set list, like the launch set, look really, really fucking good. They're very solid.
It looks good too. Yeah, and the fact that you'll be able to play like all remastered and such, it looks very pretty. And it's not even on PS, not just on PS4, it's on the Vita as well. So like, if you prefer that version, should be awesome.
I have a question. I think I heard this. I'm not sure if it's true or not. So unlike Persona 4 Dancing All Night, Persona 3 Persona. I forget,
Persona 3 and 5.
Yeah, Persona 3 and 5 Dancing. Those are actually not going to have story modes, aren't they?
Nope. They said there's going to be interactions with characters, so they have like stuff like that, apparently. They just won't have a dedicated story mode.
I'm fine just with in that. The songs. Yeah. I mean, that's already something.
It's not even the song. You have like visual novel character style character interactions, but there's not actually like a story between them.
That's what I'm meaning, yeah. So that's going to be the case, apparently. So,
which is the story mode is,
it doesn't really make any sense to have a story to the dancing game.
No, Persona 4 Dancing sucked. So like, I mean the story mode sucked in that game. So like, it's better that they don't put it in if they're not really going to put the effort. And so okay with that. Is that it for Persona Dancing?
That's pretty much what they shared, and obviously we already went over the Persona 5 anime stuff. So I mean, there's a lot of things to get excited about for that as well.
Yeah, there was also speaking of other news, we're still working on the interviews with like Dengeki and Famitsu and stuff like that, because apparently they were talking about the games in the future. Like one of the things was like Sakaguchi saying like he's going to work on Terra Battle 3 pretty soon, even if it meant still supporting Terra Battle 1 and 2, which
already talking about Terra Battle 3, huh?
He said that's his Final Fantasy, and I just like, man, I hope you really work on it, because I like Terra Battle 2, but it's just disjointed, and the story is very like, it's like people writing what they think teens talk like.
If I were like an avid Terra Battle 2 player, like I'd feel disheartened, because that means he's like, he feels like he's kind of already like moving on to his next big project, kind of like
they still support the original Terra Battle, so it's not like it's a big deal. But you know, definitely, it's like, I mean, Terra Wars is also coming out soon, so I don't know.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Didn't Terra Battle 2 just come out too?
It came out in August, yeah. So
yeah, because I remember that they were like advertising it at freaking Anime Expo.
Yeah, that's why they announced they didn't last the release date, but they actually had like a lot of talk about the characters and stuff like that. They revealed some of the characters, the protagonist and the antagonist for the first time there. But yeah, Terra Battle 3 apparently is coming up. But I wanted to mention that because one of the other more interesting pieces of news was the fact that CyberConnect 2 is going to announce a new project on February 1st. So I
wonder if it's going to be new, or if they're actually going to make good on like that little teaser that they had that kind of looked like a Ghibli movie like a year or two ago.
Actually, because there was actually like not long ago, this is probably the same thing, and I may be just mixing it, but they were hiring for a project that had was an open world game RPG with on Unreal Engine 4. So that could potentially be what it is. But that's all. That was in Famitsu. They actually had an interview with Matsuyama, the CEO Hiroshi Matsuyama, for CyberConnect 2. People who don't know, that's the makers of Dot Hack, and a lot of they develop a lot of the new Naruto games that look amazing.
They also developed
Azure's Wrath, right? Yeah.
Weren't they part of the Final Fantasy VII Remake project, but was canned?
Yeah, they were dropped.
No, they were dropped, but they also helped, like, I think on 15, right? They also upped a little bit on 15, if I'm not mistaken.
I don't remember.
Maybe not. But yeah, they were dropped, but you know, they could have just helped a little bit just where they needed them. But in any case, that's going to actually, they said specifically, whereas a lot of these interviews, they're very vague about what they have planned. That was very specific. February 1st, we're going to hear something about that. So give it a month, man. We're going to hear something.
Stroke of stories.
February Fool's Day.
Kept right. What? No. You know, it reminds me of Green Book Fantasy's April Fool's Day last year. I mean, not this year. Chow remembers and about like over buffed up looking. Oh man, they did such a great job on April Fool's. Side Games, we're talking about how they have more money that they need to spend on. They use a lot of it on stupid jokes like that. April 1st, look it up on YouTube. It's hilarious.
That reminds me that in Monster Hunter Frontier, the Japan only and Asia, I guess only, MMO. That they had these April Fool's quests. I'm wondering if they're going to do anything like that for Monster Hunter World. Since
what are April Fool's quests?
Like, they'll get one of the little, like, pig things that usually die in one hit, make it run super fast, and deal a crap load of damage.
Huh.
Give it a ton of HP, and then have it just go crazy.
Oh, man.
Well, I just want to mention that it's usually when there's like a new .hack thing, Bandai Namco is the one to handle the announcement. The fact CyberConnect's doing it leads me to believe this is more like an independent project. And so this could potentially be, indeed, that the big thing we're talking about.
Come
here.
On, Strelka Stories. Come on, Strelka Stories.
Come on, Strelka
Stories.
No. What's up?
They don't have... Did the CyberConnect still have their Canada branch? I think it was
Montreal.
Yeah,
they still do, I think.
Yeah, they do. Okay. They do, because that's like a lot of the social media stuff kind of comes
from
there.
Yeah, wonder if they're what they're doing.
Monster Hunter Stories. I've been waiting.
I thought you didn't like Monster Hunter Stories.
No, Strelka Stories. It's the game in the Little Tail Bronx universe.
Okay, you said that it about a billion times. I didn't hear it once, like what you were saying, so sorry.
It was supposed to be their 15th anniversary project, but that didn't pan out, just like how Solitaire Robo took like 10 years to develop.
So
I'm hoping they finally get to that, because Solitaire Robo was actually my favorite DS game, and I've been wanting to see another one of those passion projects.
They'll just resurrect that new world.hack MOBA game.
Oh, the world? Yeah baby. Let's bring that back. That was a bummer and a half. Oh my god. Holy shit, that was such a bad game. I was so bummed out playing that game when it first launched. I was like, this is it? This is your best effort, CyberConnect? It's like, this is the actual reboot of the franchise? Like, I hate
that's this. Why, that's why I'm still kind of like, I don't know, man. I don't know if this is what they have these days.
They canceled it for a reason. A lot of these other games are going to cancel pretty quick here, too. That's why mobile games, you know, just they come and go, man. They come and go.
Don't play mobile games. That's the big thing.
Yeah, don't play mobile games.
Yeah, I'm playing Rampo far away. And, yeah, don't
do that.
Play Grand Blue, but don't play anything else. So the last piece of news that we really got here, because this was a very short week, you wouldn't tell from the length of our podcast. One of the big things. This is the other stream that I was talking about before. Valkyria Chronicles 4. So yes, Sega held their live stream. I think it was on Tuesday in Japan. Of course, we got it Monday, but they showed off about.
I wish it was Tuesday. It's actually Wednesday. Over here. It was Tuesday. Yeah, over there.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. So they had about. They had their lengthy live stream where they showed off about 40 minutes of gameplay footage. Included with that was a new trailer, along with some other stuff, which they released those two separately. Some of the gameplay was like 7 minutes of gameplay footage, a 4-minute trailer, and then the live stream itself. We've got all that up on the site, of course. But yeah, it actually saw some crazy cool things. For one thing, they showed off more of their Grenadier, which is basically going to be important for like Siege Warfare, it looks like, because she's got, of course, this big like sort of like an arcing
grenade launcher
it's
type
like
of deal.
It's like a mortar kind of thing, right? Yeah it's like yeah. You can like you choose the arc and you can go like you can attack some guy that's like way up on top of these. Will look like castle walls, basically.
Yeah, it was like a kind of bridge on that and that footage. It seemed like the big thing that it's like you can shoot over obstacles. Like,
yeah, that's going to be really important, especially because if you want to like take out tanks without getting in their firing range, makes me actually wonder if that's going to be super effective against.
Yeah, there's also like feeding into like one of the new mechanics, and that like they made a big deal about like you know have actual like environmental destruction. In Valkyria Chronicles 4, so like if there's like a like something that's on fire, like your troops can't go over the fire without taking damage, but your tank can, for example, or like you can like initiate like avalanches in there, and obviously none of the troops can cross over the avalanche, but I imagine Grenadiers can shoot over like you know avalanche piles, so it's kind of a neat way to complement each other.
Obviously you know it's just great to have that in case you don't want to like. You can kind of clear the way for your troops to move in. A lot of those areas where, like, you know, people group together, especially around, like, flags. Like, I can tell that's going to be really important around the camps.
Oh, yeah.
But also, yeah, and I wonder if they have, like, fire extinguishers or something like that. But you're probably going to say the same thing I am, but the big thing they also showed up is the fact there's going to be ships. So yeah, it's they're having actual you have control of a ship and you'll be able to use
the Snow Cruiser Centurion.
Yes, that was actually weird because that's like in the logo too that they revealed. Like everyone was like thinking like, what is that, like an airship or just a regular like a cruiser? And that's apparently it's a ship.
Yeah, this one's cool.
Have, like Navy battles in this.
And I don't know if it's Navy battles, but since it's like in a more snowy environment, it's definitely gonna factor into it because you see when you think about snow, there's gonna be a lot of blizzards and like visibility issues. So they kind of equip this snow cruiser with like the ability to like have a radar on it when you like one of the orders is like in like being able to reveal all enemy units in a certain vicinity around the Centurion. So it's not necessarily like a ship on ship battle so far, but what they revealed, maybe they'll go in that direction. But
maybe story related, but I imagine it's going to be more like a tank, with customization.
More Super Robot Wars esque kind of battleships and more tactical uses for that rather than ship on ship warfare. But you know, it could fire its cannons as well.
I wonder if they're gonna have a thing where it's like, you know, in the other games where you can like board like a rail car or something like that to get from one side of the map to the other, if you could just board your ship and get to the other side a lot quicker. Potentially with that stuff, because those maps, I mean, man, like when they showed that off, it's like not only are they huge, but they seem dense, which is important. Okay,
it's like they're actually making use of the consoles that they have to separate to like mini maps because they're on a portable.
Yeah, that's the important thing to remember, the fact that like Valkyrie Chronicles 1 had decent sized maps, maybe outside of like the desert one that wasn't like,
it was really... like there were nice playgrounds.
Yeah, it wasn't like there wasn't like a lot in them. Mostly it was like a lot of like, you know, a lot of like tunnels and a lot of like trenches and stuff like that you can get around.
There's a lot of open maps kind of littered like buildings and stuff, but not really much variety.
It's like and when you get to like 2 and 3, 2 and pretty small maps all broken up. 3 had also like maybe actually slightly bigger maps, but both those two had the problem where they were using, and I guess the first one too, but it was like a lot of the same maps. They just decided to like have you play them again, even if you're in a totally different part of the country. And so I hope that there's more. That's the most important thing I think they could nail with this game. It's that not only are the maps big, and that they're dense, but they also need more variety of maps, more quantity.
That's what I liked about 2 and 3. It's like even to make up for like the smaller like area, they had like more interesting environments. Like if you go inside a building, even though you go get transferred to another map, there's all there, like that building is like well realized in them, and that's
it never bothered me, especially in 3. Like I got used to it, and it actually was kind of fun because like, oh, I know what to do here, that kind of thing. Like obviously when you have too much variety, it's like, oh, I'm never going to get used to these maps, I'm never going to figure the right strategy here, which, you know, I guess could also be part of the fun, as long as they don't do the whole like, you know, randomly generated maps. That would be some real shit.
Oh, man.
I don't want that in a strategy RPG.
Yeah. But I think this one is striking a nice balance so far. It looks really good. Like, they're trying to marry those two systems together. I'm really interested in, like, they kind of tease this. Like, there's, like, a dummy tank decoy mechanic. I'm like, what the fuck? All right.
That is awesome. I love that.
And there's also, like, you know, they kind of, in the gameplay footage that we posted up, like, you do see, like, a little... snippets of like other side characters, not just the main cast. Like they show a ton of them off just like in a few seconds. So there's a lot of neat designs in it. Like there's this blonde twin tail girl, but it's wearing like a knight helmet. It's really
good. That's good. And I hope that there's more like customization like that. You know, maybe we'll get like costumes and things like that. Maybe outfits that we can use. Because before, obviously, it's like with a lot of the weapons and stuff like that. But yeah, Valkyria Chronicles 4. Like right now, it's still just slated for PS4 and Vita, I believe.
No, PS4, Switch, and Xbox One.
I'm trying to be more specific here. It's going to be PS4 and Switch this spring, but later in the West, it's going to be PS4, Switch, and Xbox One. And Atlas, if I'm not mistaken, Atlas was like sort of teasing that's going to come to PC. So we'll find out.
Hopefully.
Yeah, it was one of the Atlas reps on Twitter. I think we mentioned this before when this was announced, but like they were teasing like we'll have to wait to find out, and which is basically means that they just haven't maybe signed the contracts. So if they have, they haven't made anything really worth presentable, or maybe they signed a contract where they have to only market for a particular platform for now. Who knows? In any case, we'll find out. And so once again, 2018, you might hear a little bit more about Valkyria Chronicles 4 in a little bit. But for now, I think that's it. As far
we're missing the most important thing about that stream.
What's that?
they announced a pachinko machine for the first Valkyrie Chronicles.
Oh god.
Fucking, at least it's not like the case where like that takes a place of the game, like Metal Gear Solid. So
that pachinko machine would be god awful if like Valkyrie Chronicles were the
what
exist,
if that was like, the countdown site pachinko's coming worldwide.
Yes, finally.
Didn't that happen for like a sequel to the Penny and Stocking anime or something?
Well, everyone like that thought that the Yakuza teaser was going to be that, right? Like, there was that website that went up that was like everyone like saw the that was maybe the Valkyria Chronicles one. I'm sorry, I'm mixing it because like the Yakuza 6 side had the same like logo at the bottom of it, the Zero logo, that everyone was thinking that was going to be a pachinko machine. Yeah, the Valkyria Chronicles one is actually going to be that, but it's like, wait, no, they're advertising for America. That can't be right. They're going to bring a pachinko to America.
Pachinko to America.
Oh no, it's taken over.
It's going to be one of those like pachinko apps like on mobile.
Oh,
yeah. Those things are wild.
Watch Valkyria Chronicles 4 have like a tie-in gacha app, you know, that you can use to get like unlock stuff in the main game. Just watch it.
Oh, is this like Dead Rising 3 on Xbox One?
Yeah, totally. It's totally going to be
solid mobile strikes from your phone.
Unlock the division, like where you can control the drone. It's ridiculous. Control the ship with your phone. actually probably wouldn't be so bad if you actually had like some multiplayer action going up. Anyway, I think that's it for the news. But yeah, that's been a crazy 2017. So we'll wrap things up by sharing where you can find us. Of course, you can go to rpgsite.net where we have, as I mentioned before, our Game of the Year announcements. Congratulations to all the top 5 winners and, of course, overall winner of the year, Nier Automata.
Yep.
Amazing game and well-deserving of it. Yeah, so, but, you know, like I said, we said before, we were doing things a little bit differently, so check out the article for full rundown of that. Of course, with also the Reader's Choice, which was Persona 5 by a huge landslide. It won over twice as many votes as the second place competitor.
Oh, people kind of like Persona, huh?
Surprise, yeah. Considering how our discussion went.
Weird.
Yeah.
You think that it'd be a much harder fight?
Trails in the Sky, the third, is in our top 5 in my heart.
It's number 10 on Reader's Choice, at least, too. So it made it in some form on both articles. Also, you can find us on Twitter at RPGSite, on our Facebook page, facebook.com/RPGSiteNet, youtube.com/RPGSiteNet for our videos. You can also subscribe to us on iTunes and your favorite podcast app. Just search for Tetracast. I think podcast is kind of weird, so you might have to just search for RPGSite. It pulls up there because this was brought up on our Twitter account before. Also, our permanent Discord link, discord.me/RPGSite. And lastly, we'd like to leave off. We can find us on Twitter. So where can they find you, James?
You can find me at The Sweet, TheSweeet.
Josh?
HDKirin, HDKirin.
Chad doesn't have one. You can find me at Zach Reese. So yeah, it's been crazy, as I said. Thank you all so much. It's been amazing how we switched from a bi-weekly podcast to a weekly podcast, and I think that we're able to get a lot more going here, and I think it's been very productive that way. It's been very positive. But like I said, you can also stay tuned to RPGSite.net, where we'll have our most anticipated RPG of 2018 tomorrow, December 31st, and then January 1st, we'll have our upcoming games of 2018. We'll have a full rundown of the entire list. There's a lot of games, apparently, so be sure to check that out if you want to see what's going to be coming up here. For the rest of you, though, catch us next week in the new year.
Everyone have a happy new year.
Happy new year. Hope it's great, and I hope your 2018 is better than your 2017. But yes, catch us next week for yet another edition of the Tetracast. Bye-bye, everyone.